Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go, live in Los Angeles. This is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, we're on iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1, Sirius XM Channel 83. Loaded today, Peter Schrager in 30 minutes, Kevin Durant's agent Rich Kleiman in an hour from now. The great Urban Meyer is going to be joining us today as well, and Joy Taylor is joining me. Joy, how are you this morning on a Tuesday?
I'm doing good. How are you, Colin?
I'm feeling great, and I wanted to take people down memory lane. A lot of times you go to YouTube and you watch something, and it's from the 60s or the 70s and the 80s, and you feel like you know it because you watched it. But that's not really the way it is. There's real time, and then there's going back and watching something. And I saw yesterday my former employer, ESPN, is going to expedite their Michael Jordan Chicago Bulls 10-part series and move it up here in the next couple of weeks. And I think it's a good move because I'm a talk show host and I need content. But I want to talk about those Chicago Bulls, and I believe they're the most beloved team in the history of my life and perhaps the history of the country. Really. We don't all love the Yankees when they're winning. Most people are now tired of Alabama. We really never got tired of the Bulls. We never did. And there's two or three reasons why. Let me start with this. They were based right in the middle of the country, not way down south or out west or in that rich area in the Northeast. Blue-collar Chicago, right in the middle of it. And they were built mostly through the draft. Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen drafted, right? It wasn't just, although they had some pieces, it was not just a mobility story. That's the first part. I tend to think being in the middle of the country, Ohio State football, Green Bay Packers, Jordan's Bulls, you don't feel like you're down there or up there or over there, smack dab in the heartland. The second thing, and I think this is a really big deal, why they're the most beloved team easily of my life. We were fascinated with the Heatles. We resented mostly the Warriors. People love the Bulls. People loved the Bulls. I mean, after they beat you. They may have hated them in New York, but you were kind of fascinated. It wasn't even envy. It was sort of like, I like watching them as much or more than my favorite team. And here's the second part of that, is that they played to each part of the country. The Northeast, and I've lived there for 10 years before I left, is tougher. Smaller states, lots of people. You take the subway, it's vertical living, it's multi-generational living, it's cold weather, it's tough. It's tough, brutal winters. And New Yorkers and Philadelphia guy likes to be known, Boston guy is tough. And they are tougher. Out west is different. We have big states, lots of land, fewer people. It's sunny all the time. It's already 70 out here. Not as much vertical living. We don't do subways. We get into our cars. We have backyards and space. We're not as tough. In the east, much of the money is built on tradition, law firms, Wall Street, buying and selling real estate. Those have been around forever. Out west, it's about making stuff. We make movies. Silicon Valley, we create software and apps. It's out here, in my opinion, much easier than living out there, although I really did like it out there. I love the tradition. I like the prep schools. I like the old universities. I like the old churches. Out here, we just bulldoze it and build a new one. So the sensibility of the East, tough and tradition, oh, the Bulls were all about tradition. They were tough. They go right into your face, hard foul, long, physical. They love playing in New York. They love the winter. They put the jackets on and they'd go right after you and they'd foul twice as hard as you did. That played in the Northeast. but they also played as an Eastern Conference team out west. We think we're cooler out here. Our weather's better. Silicon Valley, beaches, Kardashians. The West is about glamour. Showtime Lakers. People come out here and they make movies. They're stars. The Western Conference has had more stars than the Eastern Conference for the last 25 years in the NBA. We're about creating more space, warmer weather, easier life, not jammed in elevators. It's just the way it is out here. I always made the joke about the East Coast. Out West, when you really make money, you no longer have to wear a tie. Out East, you just buy a nicer tie. But the Bulls played to the West because they had the coolest player. And he was the most fashionable. And he may have been the most handsome. Everybody liked Michael. So the Bulls could give you lunch pail Midwest, where they were from, the Grinders. They could give you tough and physical, like the Eastern Conference in the Northeast. And then they could come out West, kick our butts, and be glamorous and cool and a rock tour. They were like U2, except they were long, could jump, and slash and dunk. They were cool, and that matters out West, where people, fair or not, think they're cooler. The other thing about this team, they could beat you so many ways. It's the longest team I've ever seen. It's the best defensive team I've ever seen. They had the best coach in Phil Jackson. They had the best player in Michael. They had the best slasher in Pippen. They had the best duo in Pippen and Michael. They had the best European player in Tony Kukoc. They had the best rebounder in Dennis Rodman. They had the best defender off the bench in Ron Harper. The centers, it was sort of a merry-go-round. This guy, that guy, the other guy. It didn't really matter. Luke Longley, Will Perdue, it didn't really matter. Bill Cartwright, nothing wrong. They're part of the team, gave them length. This team could beat you so many ways. If you could use the 1990 rules, they would destroy the Heatles, who are just too small. They would destroy the Warriors, who are too finesse. Think about this. Golden State was derailed by 6'5" P.J. Tucker of Houston. Think Pippen, MJ, and Rodman would have their way with the Warriors if you're able to hand check? There's never been a team like Chicago. Heartland, middle of the country, so they obviously played there. But they had the toughness and the traditional gravitas to play in the Northeast, where people out East, they really... And I'm a West Coast guy. I love living for 10 years in Connecticut. The churches... The people were principled. They're into tradition. You know, I've said before that people out East chase their father's and grandfather's dreams. Out West, you chase your own. You probably fail more often, but it's more entrepreneurial out West. It's more about tradition out East. And they played to the old school traditionalist out East, and they played to the cool glamour of the Western Conference. Best coach, best player, best duo, best rebounder, best shooter, Steve Kerr, best European player. They could beat you. Listen, I loved Kobe Shaq, but it felt very L.A. Shaq was doing movies. Showtime Lakers, maybe the second best team I've ever seen. But again, they felt Western. I mean, Forum, Magic, the intellect, the aloof, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. It felt very Western. And oh, by the way, I like the Heatles, but that felt like it was built solely on mobility. The Bulls had some of that, but it wasn't their nature. It wasn't their DNA. They would occasionally go get somebody to fill a gap, but it was built on Jordan and Pippen. And so I can't wait for it. I think it's going to be fantastic. There'll never be a 10-part series. As much as I enjoyed the Warriors, I never resented them. As much as I love the Heatles, I don't think they're worthy of a 10-part series. The most beloved team in my life as a sportscaster. I was a local sportscaster in Tampa, Florida. Nobody else in the department liked the NBA, so I would go cover the Bulls every time they played Shaq and the Orlando Magic. It was like no other game. It was like no other series. They were a rock band. Then I moved to Portland, and Michael Jordan spent a lot of time in Portland because of his Nike relationship, and Nike is based in Beaverton, Oregon. And they would come to Portland, and they weren't the lead sports story for me. They were an A-block story. They were the lead story. There'll never be another team that relates to all three sections of the country. The glamour of the West, lunch pail of the Midwest, and the toughness and the angst of the Northeast. Check, check, check. And they had the best coach in my lifetime, Phil Jackson. That didn't hurt either.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
So I saw this story, and it's interesting. Whenever I see a story in sports, Joy Taylor's joining me, I always try to revert back to, I've said this before, if I was an athlete, how would I act? Like Kevin Durant's agent comes on in 40 minutes. I would not have left. I'm not saying I'm Kevin Durant, so that's not analogous, but I wouldn't have left a great coach, a great roster, a great teammate. I think that's a bad call as a professional, but hey, do what you want to do. I don't care. But here's a prime example. So an NFL executive is complaining to Peter King, two of them, that they're mad that Roger Goodell will hand out punishment if anybody badmouths the idea of a draft. Says the executive, the anonymous executive, to Peter King, why on earth would you ever threaten an opinion? Whatever happened to freedom of speech? It's freedom of consequences, Chief. You got to figure that out, Mr. Executive. Let me ask you this, Mr. Executive, who complained to Peter King. Do you want 26 different people in your organization calling up columnists and talk show hosts before the draft, or would you like to have one message to the public? Oh, wait, my bad. Yeah, the NBA had a general manager that just went out on his own on a China democracy topic. The league lost $600 million. Listen, all you people that seek attaboys on Twitter, we're going into 15% unemployment. Your newspaper, people are no longer doing ads. LA Times, advertisers, done. Stay off Twitter. Support your company. Stay employed. Support your family. Companies are going to have to make really tough choices. Roger Goodell is seeking what Belichick seeks and what every CEO seeks in a crisis. Alignment. We think long and hard. We hold meetings about stuff. And then we decide as a company, this is what we're doing. If you want to be a Lone Ranger, move on to a different industry or a different company. But the NBA, Adam Silver, let everybody have an opinion on China. The hell happened? LeBron got ripped. Steve Kerr talked and then backed out. He got ripped. And I love Steve Kerr. And I love LeBron. And Daryl Morey talked and lost $500 million for the league. You're not selling out if in crisis you align right behind your leader and say, you know what, we'll get pushback on this because there's a lot of people on Twitter, although 22% of the country is all that uses it, and 6 to 8% of that 22% actually are active users. There's enough people out there that are PC, that are drama kings, trying to get attention. They'll make something out of nothing. The draft is a phone call business. So is free agency. So is releasing the schedule. Of course you go with it. Roger Goodell saying, we're in crisis. And when Facebook is in crisis, Mark Zuckerberg's doing most of the talking. And Bill Belichick doesn't let his assistants talk. And now Adam Silver made a big mistake not calling everybody, owners, GMs, players, and saying, listen, this is tough. This is a situation where I'm protecting you from yourself. Here's what we're going to say on the Chinese democracy issue. Nothing. We don't want to lose $700 million. We don't live there. It's not our form of government. And I know a lot of you are like, you're just selling out. All right. Okay. My shows are mostly sold out. I can live with that. But this idea that the NFL execs, are a couple of them are mad and now whining to media people, ask yourself this, executives. Before the draft, do you want people having opinions all over media platforms about who you guys are taking? Oh, wait, you don't. You don't want that. You want to keep it really, really quiet. In fact, I would be shocked if Howie Roseman of the Eagles and Tom Telesco of the Chargers and Chris Ballard of the Colts have meetings regularly on, hey, this is what we're saying and this is what we're doing. You think anybody's giving away their secrets to Mel Kiper or me? God, no. I know GMs. I've had dinner with them, lunch with them. Anytime I ask about their first-round pick, they get vague. They can't make eye contact with me. We like everybody. I swear to God. Because I know they've got a company policy about the draft, and they're not going to give it out. So Roger Goodell is just saying, we don't want the NBA China mess. I watched it. It was bad. They lost hundreds of millions. Stay behind it. Let's keep our TV partners at NBC happy and CBS happy and Fox happy and ESPN and Disney happy. That's who pays the bills, not Twitter. Alignment behind us. It's not selling out. It's selling. It's selling your business to your broadcast partners. Call me a sellout. But I got news for you. We're going into tough economic times. You want to be a Lone Ranger? Knock yourself out. I'm behind my company. They're going through a crisis. That means I'm going through a crisis, and I'm here for them. You go get the attaboys on Twitter. At Roger Goodell, not interested.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
So I've always had a theory. I say things and then people react to things I say. I don't react to your reaction of my reaction. There are occasional exceptions when members of the media print something inaccurately about me. Fans, I don't care. Fans are fanatics. They love me. They hate me. Doesn't matter. What does matter, though, is that you know the truth about stories that I break, which are infrequent because I don't consider myself really a reporter or a slash journalist, but I do talk to GMs all the time and coaches all the time and scouts all the time in all sports, and that's why I occasionally break a story. Like a couple of weeks ago when Tom Brady chose the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. We broke it nationally. We beat all of them. We beat the Schefters. We beat everybody. And there's a lot of great NFL reporters. I beat them by about 6 hours. That's not my business, but I did it. It's reported today by Mike Florio, and he's got a website. I don't have it in front of me, but a website, a football website, and has a radio TV show. He said, Cowherd has a relationship with a team that dates back, the Chargers, that dates back to the time they let him in his war room. And the Chargers are spreading the word they don't want Cam Newton. And so Cowherd had little choice but to play ball. And he's talking about here, Newton's a much better pick than Tyrod Taylor, which I don't think today he necessarily is. It says the Chargers, by all appearances, handed him the news that Tom Brady had picked Tampa over L.A. Well, let me protect not me, but the Chargers. No, they did not. No, they did not. And that's why I'm going to comment on this inaccuracy. Let me tell you, the Chargers did not tell me who it was. In fact, I texted the general manager of the Chargers the second I got the news. And I said, Tom chose Tampa. I'm sorry. I know you wanted him badly or something thereabouts. The general manager, Tom Telesco, sent me something that I'm not going to repeat and was a little shocked by it. Later that day, to show you the class of Telesco, he didn't have to do this. I was surprised he did. I was at home taking a nap. The phone rang. I picked it up. It was him. He called to congratulate me on breaking the story. Nobody handed me this in the NFL. It was the only time in my career that I broke an NFL story with a non-NFL source. In fact, that non-NFL source is tickled, thinks it's hysterically funny that the biggest story of the NFL was broken by him, who happens to be a friend of Tom Brady and an acquaintance and a friend of mine. So let me just clear the air to protect the Chargers. They did not hand me that story. They didn't. You know, I'm not religious, but I swear in a stack of pseudo-Bibles, that's not where I got it. In fact, I told them.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Rich Kleiman's Kevin Durant's business partner, co-founder of 35 Ventures, founded with KD. They're doing this thing called Cue Ball. It's a documentary, chronicles the lives of incarcerated basketball players, San Quentin State Prison. It's remarkable stuff. It's on Fox Sports. What I'm hearing, it's unbelievably well done. And Rich is joining us. Let me start with this. So I want to talk about Kevin. He tested positive for COVID-19. So let's just address that first, Rich. How is Kevin?
Kevin is fortunately feeling great. He is way past the isolation period. He's symptom-free. He is, for all intents and purposes, now back to the similar isolation that we're all kind of getting used to with the guidelines that were put in place, but nothing more than what we're dealing with now and is out of the kind of dark period. So thanks for asking, and he's feeling pretty good.
This was always going to be a difficult year. Kevin is verbal. He likes to talk. He likes social media, and lots of people do. I have friends that are on their phones all day, my kids. And so when he got shut down for the year, he's an artist. and he couldn't do his artistry. He couldn't play basketball, where he's probably first or second best player in the world. I always thought, Joy and I said, it's going to be tough for Kevin because Kevin likes to perform. Has it been difficult, not just the virus, but for a great performer to not perform? If I was a great artist and I couldn't sing for a year, that takes away a big chunk of me. How tough has this all been for Kevin?
Well, you are an artist, by the way. And if they took away your show, you'd be miserable, right? So I think
yes.
I think there's the obvious that, you know, when your true love and your life's passion is taken away from you, there's that feeling, that exact feeling, the literal feeling of like, this thing I love more than anything in the world, I can't do. I can't play basketball. But I think that he's incredibly mentally strong. I think some people question that because of his kind of banter on social media, and I think one clearly has nothing to do with the other. And he's incredibly mentally strong, and I think he was quick before anyone around him, before all his friends and family, to see this as some sort of blessing and know that that was the only way he could look at it, and to start to watch film, to start to kind of master the mental side of the game, to take a well-needed reprieve. I mean, you think about how hard these guys go from the age of 8, 9, 10 years old. I think he really looked at it as like an opportunity in that way, to kind of understand and learn the organization, to kind of define his voice within the organization, to watch his team play, to be in coaches' meetings, to be active. I mean, everyone saw how active he was on the bench this year. And, you know, I think he had to see it as a blessing. But, of course, when you're Kevin Durant, if you're anybody that is something taken away that they love, it's, you know, it's frustrating.
You were, you know, it's funny. You were in sports, and then there's you work in music, and you're back to sports. And I think more than any sport, every sport has a different sensibility. Rich Kleiman joining us, partner with KD. And I think basketball and music have always been connected at the hip for years. And I grew up loving the NBA in the 70s, and I've always felt there's kind of a music NBA thing now more than ever. You worked with Jay-Z, so you were sports, you worked with Jay-Z, or you were in music, and now you're back to sports. Are there similarities? I mean, kind of take me through that tunnel of, you know, celebrities, stars, music, and sports, and how they're conjoined.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's been well documented and pretty obvious for decades now how enmeshed the world of hip-hop is and the world of basketball. I think for me, I was always obsessed with the world of sports. And I had such a gauge on my own ability, which I think is rare a lot of times with kids that like play so much and try so hard to make it to certain levels. I knew pretty early on, like I would be in the right gyms in New York to quickly know that my days were numbered. And I would be in the right rooms with the right players growing up in New York and say, well, I can't even like imagine moving at that speed. But I didn't want to be out of the gym. Like, I just wanted to be around it. And when I would go to Knick games, I found myself just glued to the courtside seats, to just glued to the energy around the different personalities that were in the arena, and just how incredible all of that was. And for me, it was like, if I can be close to the game in that way, in any way, then I got to pursue that. And I saw so many similarities with kind of the just natural, inherent cool that people in the NBA had to me when I was a kid,
yeah,
and to these like music impresarios and to these guys that were kind of creating their business and their enterprise just by themselves. You know, people like Jay-Z and people like Puff Daddy and people like Jimmy Ivey. And you saw this happening. And for me, like, I started in sports. I was trying any way to get into it, so much so that, like, I was a bookie in college. But we'll shelve that for a second. I wanted everything to do with sports. So when I had an opportunity to work on this show, The Life, on ESPN, I felt like I was as close to sports at that point in my life that I was going to get. But the only real job they had for me was the music. And they told me they had a music budget. They told me if I didn't spend it all, I could keep it. So right away, I said, okay, I'm not spending any of it then. And I went and found all these unsigned artists and producers and young labels in New York. And I started saying to them, if we get your music on the credits on ESPN's The Life, you know, I can't pay you, but it's going to be, you can sit in the living room with your family and show them that you made it. That brought me into the music industry. Ultimately, my journey through music, I was able to meet Jay-Z, had an opportunity to work for him for years and work on different projects in music with different Grammy-nominated artists. I managed artists that are incredibly successful today. But I knew that sports was my life's passion. And when I had the opportunity to get back into it, I really just never looked back on music. And it was odd for a lot of people around me because I had put so much into it. But that's not what I cared about. Like, I studied collective bargaining agreements when I was younger because I thought it was cool. I memorized box scores. I knew every college of every player that played for the teams in the 80s and 90s. So when I had an opportunity to get back into sports, I just jumped into it. And I think all the different, like, principles that I had learned in the entertainment business and all the different kind of deal-making strategies and the personalities and just understanding how to communicate with talent, I was able to take that, add to that what I knew so well in terms of sports and the business of sports, and then for me it just felt natural from that point forward.
You know, I've compared Kevin to Aaron Rodgers. Great, transcendent, generationally relevant, smart on and on the court, smart with business. Both have some Silicon Valley ties. And both are sensitive. And I've said repeatedly on this show, it's okay to be sensitive. I have people in my family that can't take criticism. And then, you know, for me, I've been getting it all my life doing this. It's no big deal. I'm numb to it. Kevin, when he left the Warriors, I said, I think he's making a mistake. I think this is the perfect place for him. I think they're incredibly human at Golden State. I think that he has great support system. And I think Steph's the easiest superstar to play with, perhaps, in the league. And I stand by that. I didn't like seeing him leave. Was there any point during it, as his business partner, that you guys talked about it, that you wrestled with it? Or did Kevin make up his mind and, you know, as somebody, as his business partner, you just say, all right, that's your decision. I respect it. I'm going to support you. Was there any wrestling with it?
Well, a few things. We'll get back to the sensitive thing because I think that that word is used too quickly when it comes to people that like to communicate and talk about their emotions and disagree. But putting that aside, yes, we talk about it. Yes, we wrestle with it. And yes, it's his decision ultimately, and I never challenge it. I think that especially in the evolution of our relationship, because I started as his agent, I kind of transitioned into being his agent and really more so his manager.
Yeah.
And then we kind of took all of the assets within that ecosystem and turned it into this business and enterprise and hired a staff and created a platform. So our kind of dialoguing has changed. So yes, obviously, just like any decision we make as business partners, I talk to him about it. But what we're not business partners in is his job in the NBA. In that job, I'm his manager, I'm his friend, I listen, and nobody can make a more educated decision, nobody, on where they're going to play but players in the NBA. And I think that is kind of the tricky thing at times because it's like if you had asked me what job you should take at a certain network, I'd give you my opinion, but I don't know the ins and outs of what goes on every day. I don't know who you see when you walk through the hallway, how human resources deals with you, where you want to live, what kind of temperature and climate you want to live in. Those decisions he has to make and he has to stand by and who he wants to play with. And, like, I think from that standpoint, I get frustrated when I hear certain people say, like, that agents, how could they let a player make that decision? How could they ever allow him to go there? Like, that representation should be fired. Like, that's days in the past. That's
right.
that's all stereotype because the reality is NBA players and athletes in general, to me, are some of the most astute business minds you'll find, especially at young ages. So I give my opinion for sure. And it's like everyone knew I was a Knicks fan. Kevin knew that. But at the same time, like, we talk and then he makes his decision.
Yeah. Let's get back to the sensitive part. You don't like me using that word.
Well, I think I sometimes, and I'm not even saying this with Kevin. I think, like, sensitive, emotional, it's like a blurry line because, like, okay, so does Kevin find it okay to go back and forth with somebody that disagrees or makes some blanket statement or some inaccuracy? Yes. Does that usually represent somebody that's, like, in agony over the statement or so pissed off that they have to somehow defend themselves? Yeah, that usually is, like, some kind of reflection of someone being sensitive. I think that Kevin honestly, like, enjoys the banter the same way you sit with the microphone and enjoy the conversations. I just listened to your whole thing about Michael Jordan, the Bulls, for 6 minutes. You put so eloquently, like, why everybody loved the Bulls. You enjoy that. Kevin enjoys that banter with people on social media, and that's honestly why these platforms were created. I think he's really ahead of his time because I think when he started it, everybody thought he was nuts and sensitive, and everyone wanted to know why he would ever stoop to this level. And then you see everybody doing it. I mean, it's just kind of the way of the world, and he grew up in this generation.
Yes.
I don't think it reflects how he's feeling. It's like when he puts the phone down, you don't see him walk to the kitchen like, I can't believe this kid just said I'm... You know what I'm saying?
I mean,
like, he doesn't think about it like that.
Yeah, no, some of this stuff, Rich, is generational. Joy and I sometimes, Joy will do stuff, and I'm like, my daughter's constantly trying to talk me into going on TikTok. And I'm like, I'm not going on TikTok. But you know what? I'm like, but she just loves it. And I'm like, I should be a better dad. So I think your answer is very...
I'm TikTok with my kids, by the way.
No, I mean, your answer is real. As I'm in my 50s, Kevin's in his, I think, early 30s or late 20s. How old is Kevin right now?
31.
Okay. And he's got a lot of years left. By the way, the NBA is dealing with a virus. It's really unfortunate that it comes right in the heart of what I thought was a fascinating season. I would like to see the league, I think this is too good of a year to let it go, especially for some older star players, and I don't know how many years they have left. But this is also a very fluid situation globally. I don't want you to speak for Kevin, but where do you land and maybe your business with KD land on the return of the NBA this year in the next 45 days maybe?
Got it. Well, I definitely will not speak for Kevin, and I don't think it has any effect on our business. I know it doesn't, but I can speak to you as just a fan of the NBA and with somebody with a point of view. It troubles me a bit. I think that when you hear the head of the CDC get on and say that millions of Americans will most likely be affected and potentially hundreds of thousands of people dying, you know, when 9/11 happened, as tragic as that was, there was an obvious need for some sense of getting people together, some sense of patriotism, and it was an isolated event. While so tragic and scary, as the days continued to go, we were ready to see something to distract us. The reality is while we do want to be distracted and let's say, quote-unquote, entertained now, and it would be so nice to see professional sports, the idea of trying to salvage something that may just not be salvageable is the reality. Like, this is so fluid. I'm in the middle of New York right now. It's horrible. And as this thing spreads across the country, to think that players are going to be so flexible to say, okay, you know what? I'm an NBA player. I'll be self-quarantined for 14 days, go to some isolated venue, play basketball in empty arenas, because that's going to make everyone feel better. Well, I don't think that's necessarily true, and I don't think that that's necessarily the right thing to do. And I know there's a lot of money at stake. I don't want to speak to that. I think that this is one of those situations where the reality is it may just not be salvageable. And maybe it will be in a month, because I think a month ago we never could have imagined where we are now. But I just think it's a bit frustrating to see so much dialogue on how we can rescue the season, when in reality it's like we're in the middle of it. Like, we're smack in the middle of this tragedy in the world, and I can't even imagine, like, emotionally, why would players be any different than us? Why are they not going to react the same way we would going back to work in the midst of this going on? I just don't know. You know, I know there's an economic part to it that I won't get into the minutiae on that. And that's real, because that has to do with the economy and everything. But, you know, there's so much to take into account, and to think that, like, putting a season together in the middle of this, like, just so we can get, like, an empty arena Bucks-Pacers game on a Friday, is that really going to get everybody back in the swing of things? Like, no.
No, I think that's a really honest answer. Rich Kleiman, co-founder, 35 Ventures, founded with KD. I like that you answer all the... You answer all the questions. A lot of people don't. You do. I like that. You know, Kevin's not going to do our show because I think sometimes it's funny. I saw Draymond Green at a fight, and he came up and he said, I really like you. You defend me. And then I think to myself, I have Rich Kleiman on today. That probably means Rich thinks I don't like KD, which I do. And I always – Kevin's a very complex person, and I don't always agree with what he does, but he's incredibly human. He's raw. He's open. And I got to be honest, he's unique A lot of athletes follow in step. He doesn't. And I like that about him. He's a very, very unique person. I get his emotions. I see him crying. I see him mad. I see him arguing. And I, you know, as a sportscaster, Rich, I like that. He gives me a lot of different stuff. And I like that. I appreciate that.
And I honestly, I never really thought, and I do watch your show. I'm kind of just like consume so much, too much. But I feel like in order to build our business, I have to get such a gauge in the temperature of the world and our in the league and sports in general that I do. And I enjoy watching your show. I don't think you dislike him. I think you're honest as well. And I think that, like, you give your different feelings on him. But I never once felt that your overriding sentiment was that you didn't like him. Like, I don't think you have a stance one way or the other. And I know you respect his game. And I think to Kevin, that's really what's important. Like, everybody doesn't need, you guys don't all have to like him. And I think you also speak in a sophisticated way about the game. And I know for me, I can tell, like, look, I'm not, I don't think that every reporter can speak about sport or a game the same way others can. And just because they didn't play doesn't mean they don't have an incredible knowledge of it. And I think you fall in that category.
I love
it. You really know sport.
Yeah, I love, and by the way, I love the, Joy and I both, I grew up with the Sonics and the Blazers. I'm one of those guys, what you like at nine, you like, and I love the NBA. I mean, the NBA, you know what's funny, Rich, about the NBA, and I appreciate this. I tell people this all the time. You know, like, baseball is like Disneyland. It's not cool or hip, but you feel better when you take your kids to a game. The NBA is fashion and music. People love it or they don't, but it's style matters. I mean, Dr. J got me into the league because he was cool and he was different. Style matters. The NFL is just a cold business, and I read the Wall Street Journal, so I like business. And it's okay. Yep. It's okay, Rich, for all three sports to be different. Soccer's international. Baseball is very much traditional. The NBA is hip-hop, cool, young, progressive, and stylish. And the NFL is pro-business and Wall Street. And, God, I love the NFL and the NBA. And their sensibilities are totally different. One is very much about the star. One's very much about the shield. And I think that's what's great about sports. I mean, that's what's great about music.
Funny. If baseball is taking your kids to Disney World, soccer's like that one summer where you tell your kids you're going to go to Europe because you want to do something a little bit more cultural.
That is so true. Hey, Rich, thanks for coming on the show.
It's my pleasure. It's my honor. I will say one last thing.
Sure.
The only reason why everybody loved the Bulls, even though that whole thing you said was incredible, it was just because of Michael Jordan.
Well, he was, you know what, the best player, the most fashionable player, arguably the most handsome player. He was the coolest player, and he was winning all the titles. And by the way, Bob Costas said this yesterday, Rich. Jordan did get one break. He got the Nike money before anybody else, and they built a protective shield around him, Rich. So even the criticism of him, that he could be a bad teammate and selfish, he was almost like Ronald Reagan as a president. We liked Reagan so much. We loved Reagan. I mean, Reagan was like everybody's cool, handsome grandpa. We liked Reagan so much. His mistakes, he once joked about bombing Russia. We're like, oh, that's Reagan. You know, if Obama does that, he gets crushed.
Also, if Jordan said that and they didn't, and he said it in between the 11 o'clock news and the morning news, it wouldn't be a big deal. I mean, it was just a different era. You know, he played one national TV game. There was the exposure we got to him was just him at his peak performance doing what he did best. Nowadays, you get exposed doing everything in your life. You're just held to a different lens. But he's just Michael Jordan. I mean, it's like a recipe for some magic that we'll never understand. But everybody loved him. Even New Yorkers loved him.
Rich Kleiman. Thanks, bud.
Thanks, man.